I welcome Ann back to the podium.
Thank you.
Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Brian Laird. I'm a high school teacher. And excuse me if this is just too obvious of an answer for this question, but if the U.S. does violate Article 55, which seems all the evidence you've presented seems to indicate that, what does the rest of the U.N. do, or how do other countries try to go about enforcing any sanctions or any actions taken against the United States?
Okay. There are a lot of people who say that the U.N. has no enforcement power as the U.S. government has, and therefore it's worthless. As we've all discovered, there's no easy way to enforce the U.S. Constitution within the United States either, when the Supreme Court does nothing and the Attorney General does nothing. So it's not that different from the situation in the U.S. that you have to struggle for it. The method of enforcing U.N. decisions, there are several methods. One is for one country to sue another country in the world court, charging that they have violated the law. And as I think I mentioned briefly, the U.S. sued Iran in the world court and said that the hostage taking was illegal. The world court, Iran said, we won't agree to UN, the jurisdiction of the world court. And when that happens, the world court appoints somebody other than Iran to represent Iran's case so that the case is made. So the U.S. charged Iran with hostage taking. Iran didn't defend itself. Somebody else did. The world court ruled that Iran was wrong. And then they established a commission to decide how much damages should be paid. And I don't know whether you realize, Iran paid those damages. When Nicaragua sued the U.S. for damages for bombing for placing mines in the harbor and for all the things we did for the Contras, the U.S. said it wouldn't agree to the jurisdiction. It said exactly the same thing Iran had said last time. And the World Court did the same thing. They appointed somebody to make the U.S. position. And I'm sure the U.S. wrote the brief, but another person presented it. The World Court ruled that the U.S. was guilty or wrong, and they ordered that a commission should be established to decide. The next step would have been to order a commission to decide how much damages should be paid. At that moment, Nicaragua changed its leadership, and the new head of Nicaragua, whose name was Wright, withdrew that request from the world court, so that what would have happened if they had gone forward, they would have decided how much damages the U.S. owed. But because the head of the country withdrew the request, nothing happened. In the same way now, the world court is going to decide whether Israel is guilty or not guilty of building the fences illegally. So the answer to your question is that any nation could today sue the U.S. in the world court for these violations. The reason they're not doing it is they're afraid of the economic consequences, but they have the power to do it. That's one method of one nation suing another nation in the world court. Another method is for all of the nations to vote, and this is how the Israeli wall came before the world court. General Assembly voted to ask the World Court the question, is it legal or illegal? And the General Assembly has that power. It isn't true in the U.S. You can't ask the U.S. Supreme Court to decide something. It has to be plaintiff versus defendant. But that's not true in the World Court. So that there can be a question raised by a nation, nation versus nation, in the World Court. Or it could be a nation raises the question in the General Assembly, and you get enough votes to have it be a majority, and then the question goes to the World Court. Now, after the World Court has made its decision, how you enforce it depends upon us. And I think it's up to us to see to it that our country enforces or lives up to what the World Court decides. Now, I'm not sure that answered your question. Is it in the book? Okay? Yes.
Hi, welcome to Sacramento.
Thank you.
I love your hat. The last time I saw anybody wear hats like you are here is Bella Abzug.
Of course.
And Bella was always very outspoken.
Right.
And I think it's great that you're doing this. So anyway, and doing it while wearing your red bowler, I think that's fantastic. It's a very pretty hat, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to compliment you on that. Now, the question I have is, I live in a town south of here, south of Sacramento, about 15 miles, called Elk Grove. And last night, the Elk Grove City Council decided to break away from the regional transit, the bus and train system here, in some ways. I mean, there were backroom deals made, I suspect violations of the Brown Open Meeting Act and so on, that's enforced here in California. But anyway, it's a weak law. But I'm kind of intrigued by what you said about labor unions and how they had rights. And I wasn't sure exactly which law it was, the covenant or the convention, that applied to labor unions and their rights. And so the question I have is about how the labor union. I suspect that they will be trying to save money in Elk Grove by not allowing the new bus company to have a union, and so pay them less money. The only way they can save money is on the backs of the workers.
Right.
So instead of paying a bus driver $20 an hour, they'll be paying them $8 an hour, and no health benefits and so on. So that's where how they're going to save the money.
Right.
So I think this would be now, if I'm right about my intrigue in this. This could be a very good organizing tool for battling privatizing, the privateers that are running our cities. So was it the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights? Oh, okay, that's the one.
Give me 1 second, and you're going to have it right in front of you here.
And so this covenant protects the rights of labor unions as well as the individual rights, because we always think in terms of, you know, my rights, your rights, but then we don't ever think in terms of where we're all together, our rights, and which are our organizational rights. We think as social workers, as I'm going to help you and I'm going to help you, but never I'm going to help all of us, or we'll work together to try to organize. So anyway,
stand there.
Sure.
Just read it out
loud. Oh, you want me to read it out loud? Okay, I have to.
Okay.
Oh, Article 22 of the UN.
The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights.
Which says, everyone shall have the right to freedom of association with others, including the right to form and join trade unions for the protection of his interests. Oh, my. I think we could find our local Elk Grove Walmart in violation of
that. There you go. And the next one goes on
restrictions. No restrictions may be placed on the exercise of this right other than those which are prescribed by law and which are necessary in a democratic society in the interests of national security. I could imagine the security people coming out at the Elk Grove Walmart saying something like, well, I'm sorry, but you're violating the security of our nation by being here. Okay. So, or public safety, public order, the protection of public health or morals, or the protection of the rights and freedoms of others. This article shall not prevent the imposition of lawful restrictions on members of the armed forces and of the police in their exercise of this right.
So fundamentally, friends, when they wrote the UN Charter, some of the people were good union, some people were Marxists, some people were union members, some people were capitalists, but at that time they had to write the Charter. And then when they wrote the Covenant, they spelled it out more specifically. And Article 22 is enforceable if you enforce it. I mean, if you stand up and say we demand it, then it will happen.
Well, the follow-up to this, Anne,
and
again, I'm impressed with your beautiful hat and your presence here tonight. I have to. We need to encourage each other to do this kind of thing. But anyway, the question I have then is, how do we use that as an organizing tool? I only see one copy, and it says $40. And I know that the Mickeljohn Institute probably has a lot of expense, and that's why they have to recover their expense in publishing that. But I think every labor organization, every stewards council of every labor organization, every library, every organizing group, and I'm looking at Linda Roberts over there, but anyway, she's with the SEIU, or was anyway. All of us, I'm a member of my stewards council with a group. We should buy a copy of that book and discuss that at our labor, at our stewards council.
Yes. Now, I only told you half of it, just so it's clear.
Oh.
So I agree. And if you had a bulk order, we'd charge less. Friends, in this book, it talks about all these things. Then let me ask you an exam question. Guess how many United States courts have decided cases for the people on our side based on the UN Charter or these three treaties? Make a guess.
No.
That's what most people guess. Okay, you flunk.
Yeah.
And that's why we wrote this book, because the first half of the book shows that 69 United States courts have decided on our side based on the UN Charter or these treaties. So it's way beyond where we think it is. And it is outrageous that the media has never covered this in all these years.
How did they find?
They found for our side, like in a case of an immigrant or a deportee.
All 69.
69 courts. We found them by looking in the books. I mean, and you can get them off the internet. But I'm telling you, and we've put them all in here. And I want to just say one more thing. I told you about the UN Charter. I told you about the Nuremberg Principles. I told you about the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Remember, Convention Against Torture. And the Convention on Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And those are all ratified treaties. Now I'll tell you a joke, because this book has three more that we've signed, but the Senate has not voted on. How many of you in this room care about the rights of women? I mean, we signed the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, and the Senate has never voted. The President signed it, but it's never been voted. How many of you care about children? Convention on the Rights of the Child. Every nation in the world except the United States and one other has ratified that treaty. And the third one, for Marxists, the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. We've signed it. It's never been debated in the Senate or ratified. Those are also in here. And the joke is that while you're supposed to enforce treaties that are ratified, you're not supposed to violate treaties you signed. Remember SALT II, the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, signed by the President, never ratified by the Senate, but we obeyed it. We did not disobey it. We're in exactly the same situation. The Convention on Elimination of Discrimination on the Rights of the Child and the Covenant on Economic and Cultural Rights. So we have even more, and if you're talking about trade unions, the rights of labor are spelled out even more in the Convention on International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. I didn't go to great length, but I want to make clear that there's a whole ton of law, and a couple of Supreme Court cases use the treaties we've signed but haven't ratified. Go.
Well, on the same subject, so when you say 69 courts, that's multiple cases in those 69 courts or 69 cases?
69 cases in 69 different courts. One of them is in New York, one of them, they're all over the country.
So how many that argued on the basis of the UN Charter and the treaties, how many such cases were lost?
I did not count them.
Okay, well, 69 is good and we won't count the other
right.
ones.
I'm curious about other agreements, trade agreements like NAFTA, for instance. As I understand it, Mexico had to alter its constitution in order for NAFTA to pass in Mexico, mm-hmm. which took away land rights mm-hmm. for the people of Chiapas. Now, was Mexico a signatory to these treaties as well? It's about our case here in the United
yes.
States, because our constitution is being superseded by these agreements,
well,
right?
Let's be very clear. NAFTA is not a treaty. It takes a two-thirds vote, and they didn't think they could get a treaty, two-thirds vote. So it's an agreement.
Yeah.
It's not a treaty. NAFTA was voted by the House and Senate by majority vote. It could be wiped out by majority, simple majority vote. The same is true of FTAA. These are agreements, not treaties. If Mexico decided to give up its constitutional rights in favor of that agreement, that would be nasty, but that's Mexico's problem.
Right.
But in the United States, there is nothing at all that would permit any treaty to violate the U.S. Constitution. Nor can the U.S. Constitution be violated by ignoring a treaty since it's the supreme law of the land.
Okay.
I'm not saying I can convince every judge of this, but I am saying that that is actually the law.
Or the president.
Right. I think we have to start looking in many ways differently at the U.N. than we have in the past. It is effective. Have any of you been to South Africa? They know about the U.N. in South Africa. Nelson Mandela would not be alive, let alone president of an independent South Africa, if the U.N. had not done what they did all through the years. That isn't the only thing, but that's one fact. East Timor would not exist if it weren't for the U.N. There are children all over the world who are alive because of the World Health Organization. And so I would suggest that we really largely in this country are ignorant. And the reason is, it's very clear, if you look up in the cases, when I said there were 69 cases, immediately after 1945, immediately after the UN Charter was adopted, there was talk. The U.S. Supreme Court mentioned the U.N. Charter. Then came the McCarthy period, and the New York Times stopped talking about the U.N. at all in an affirmative way on any page except 94. And other newspapers didn't mention it at all. The U.N. stopped existing. And we've very, very slowly gotten back in the habit of realizing that the United Nations exists. And so if you take this on and say it just as if it's automatic, it can have an impact. It's called the mobilization of shame. And if you think about how we got rid of, somebody's here from Alabama, if you think about how we got rid of segregation, it was the mobilization of shame. The Supreme Court handed out an opinion in 1954 for school segregation. When did they stop segregating in the schools of Sacramento? I don't know, but when I moved to Berkeley in 1959, they were still segregated schools. There's nothing automatic in the U.S. system. We have to demand it, and the same is true in the U.N. system. Yes.
Hi, my name is Travis. I'm a community college teacher. I'm fascinated by the whole case of Guantanamo Bay. It's the most cynical manipulation of that piece of property, and to say that it's not the territory of the United States and it belongs to Castro, I mean, it's absurd. Could you give us some more insight on why we're stuck with detainees still being there, why that hasn't already pushed its way to court and unraveled itself, because I can't figure out why it's taking so long.
I am not a, I have not a global glass ball. The logic says that Cuba is not in charge of Guantanamo Bay. That's perfectly obvious. It's obvious that that piece of property is being run by the United States government. If there were a piece of property in the United States that was occupied by the British Embassy and something happened there, the British Embassy is in charge of what happens on that piece of property. The United Nations is in charge of the piece of property in New York where the United Nations building is. It's not run by the United States. It's run by that entity. Guantanamo Bay is run by the United States. And that's why I had you read the Constitution. There is nothing in the Constitution that says that the Fourth Amendment, no unreasonable seizure, which they do at Guantanamo, there's nothing that says it does not apply anywhere. Fifth Amendment, due process of law, habeas corpus, there's nothing in the Constitution that says it doesn't apply wherever the Constitution applies, and the Constitution applies wherever the United States is in charge. If Fidel tried to walk out to Guantanamo Bay, they would do something to him because they, that is the United States military, says it's in charge. So there is no excuse for what has happened. How do you get into court? A person files a lawsuit. But the people in Guantanamo Bay can't talk to a lawyer. They can't file a lawsuit. So in some instances, the parents have filed lawsuits. And the judges in some cases have said, we have to see the person. You're saying on behalf of your son, or but your son isn't here, and they've actually thrown him out on that terrible ground. Other cases have said this is outside our jurisdiction because the federal government says it's outside of our jurisdiction. There have begun to be cases, not about Guantanamo, but about detainees in other places. There's a Judge Weinfeld in New York who's just livid, and he's begun to say we cannot be detainees in this way who are in New York. And because of commotion that's been raised, some people have been released from Guantanamo Bay, and they've been sent back to England. You saw that the other day, if you heard about it. And they weren't tried. They were then released. So there's nothing wrong. There's nothing valid about holding these people. I don't know exactly. There are lawyers who are trying in many, many different ways. There are people coming back from Guantanamo Bay who are to try to do this. But there are other terrible stories, not just about Guantanamo Bay. There was a man, I'm giving this as a different example, and we have this in our new book, and this was an OIG, an Office of Inspector General complaint. A man came to this country from Pakistan, and he said that he would be in trouble in Pakistan. So he came to the United States, married, didn't become a citizen, applied for permanent resident status, and applied for political asylum. and they never decided the case. After 911, they told him to come down to the office, and he came down, and they held him. Then he said, I need to get my decision made on my application for political asylum. Political asylum here was finally held, but he couldn't come because he was in jail. After the deadline, they shipped him back to Pakistan. Within 3 weeks, they had decided he should be given political asylum. He'd been killed. And that's the first story we're telling in our new book, Challenging U.S. Human Rights Violations in 911. And there are more stories like this of disappeared people who went down, not in Guantanamo Bay, from the United States. They went down to the place where they were to register for being from some country, non-citizens, and they vanished. They've never been heard from again. And so what I can say is that it is an absolute outrage. And what I say to people is, this is much worse than the McCarthy period. How many of you had trouble in the McCarthy period? How many lost a job? How many lost two jobs? How many couldn't get a passport? How many, I went through myself, all of these things. This is much, much worse. And I don't think people understand that. The people in this room have not been affected in that way. But part of the reason there aren't more people in this room this week and every week or every month is that the whole age group around 50 to 60 who are our children are not coming to meetings like this. It was a Cold War against the progressive in this country, war, and we lost. And the result of it is that today, Bush and company can do the things that they are doing, and the left is not there to act quickly or to get ahead of them. And the answer of Guantanamo Bay is to raise it every single minute. Have your students read the habeas corpus, have them read the First Amendment, have them read the Fourth, have them read that sheet of paper, and see that it is illegal. And then I think, myself, one thing to do is to demand that Boxer do something. Another thing is demand that Pelosi do something, for heaven's sake. She's the leader of the Democrats. Another thing is to make it clear they will not be elected unless they do something. You all live in Sacramento. And I think in Sacramento you could go to the city council and ask them to pass a resolution saying that Barbara Boxer should be asked to do something about Guantanamo Bay. I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, that one thing is connected to another. It is outrageous, and friends, it builds such hatred against us in the world as a whole. My belief is that we are in worse shape than we were in before, and this is the first time in the history of the world when there's been one nation capable of destroying all life on the planet with nuclear weapons. Never happened before. There's one nation capable of destroying all life on the planet by our treatment of the atmosphere, by polluting the atmosphere with fumes from gasoline. I mean, oil. It has never happened before that one nation had such power. It wasn't true during the period when there was a Soviet Union, however misguided and wrong it was in some ways. It did, and right in some ways, it did stop some of what the United States otherwise would have done. And so I think that we're in a new moment, and it's up to you folks in this room to help people like me who are call ourselves lawyers to figure out what to do. But one thing is to not let Bush make a speech without saying Guantanamo, violating the Constitution. And the end product is going to be such hatred of us that we will not be able to travel abroad. We will not be able to do anything. And it isn't just Guantanamo. It's a small example. We're talking about Spain. What happened up there? It turned out it wasn't the Basques who did those acts in Spain. I'm a member of the National Lawyers Guild. We had a convention in Minneapolis. We invited a lawyer from Basque country, a Basque lawyer who's never been arrested, never charged with any crime or any other thing. He's a lawyer. He's represented people who won and lost. Got on an airplane in Spain, got on off in Chicago, and was forbidden to go to Minneapolis, back on the plane and sent back to give a speech at a National Lawyers Guild conference. I don't know if you know that, what's her name, from England, you know who I mean, came to Chicago. Bernadette Doyle got off the plane in Chicago. You heard that. Did you hear all that story? Oh, she and her daughter came to Chicago to go to the christening of a relative or something. They called her name. She went there. They said, do you have, what right do you have to be here? They shackled her and said she could either go to prison or go back to Ireland at that moment. happened. So it isn't only Guantanamo. It's also many other things. Why is it that the U.S. government officially said they didn't want to be in the International Criminal Court? They said exactly. Too many U.S. military people would be charged with committing crimes against humanity, crimes against peace, and war crimes. I mean, that's pretty explicit. So this is fascism by a country much larger than Germany, a country with a different tradition. And that's why I wear my red hat. Friends, whatever you're doing, I'm not saying you have to do more. You've got to do something different, stronger, more effective, imaginative, something different than you've ever done. Or we are not going to get through this era, as far as I can tell. Go.
The lesson that I take is the law is just a promise without there being social movements on the ground or active political groups and active citizenship. The thing that I seem to notice is that so many people are scared. And that seems to me is exactly like the 50s, is that they've terrified everybody about being political in any way. And, you know, just go out and shop at the mall. Remember, it's 9/12, it was go back to shopping, please. That'll save the economy. And don't talk about anything else. But they've really terrified everybody. So that people are scared to express opinions that are out of the ordinary, you know, that aren't just Rush Limbaugh opinions. And people are scared of talking politics.
Well, is the high school teacher still here? Oh, one of the things I urge everybody here, do you remember the 30s, any of you? I think it's important that we talk about the 30s, just so it's clear. In 1932, in Lansing, Michigan, which is where I'm from, there were a bunch of white male auto workers who were Republicans. They were anti-union, they were anti-Negro, anti-black. They knew everything. And then they lost their jobs. And within 2 years, these white male auto workers who were anti-union, Republicans, and anti-black were no longer Republicans. And they could see that they needed to work with blacks because blacks were also in unions. They joined unions, they became Democrats, and they built the United Auto Workers Union. I mean, that is reality. And Roosevelt did not do all those things. I hope you realize Roosevelt didn't give us the New Deal. People went and lost their lives, some of them in Washington, in picketing. They lost their lives on picket lines in the rest of the country. They worked, but we won. So I think what we have to do at the present moment is to teach people that being afraid is not going to solve their problems. It means their sons are going to go to the army or to the military, or they're going to be unemployed, and that there is no choice but to act. And that can be fun and also effective. And I think we have to have some small victories. And I'll give you one story. That Article 55 and 56, the United Nations shall promote higher standards of living. I did a jokey thing in 1990. I took out the word United Nations and I put in the word City of Berkeley. For all these reasons, the City of Berkeley shall promote full employment, higher standards, universal respect for and observance of fundamental human rights for all. And I proposed it to the Commission on Peace and Justice, of which I happen to be chair. And the commission voted for it, and we took it to the city council. And the city attorney said, and it sounds nice. What is this for? What does it mean? I said, I don't know, but doesn't it sound nice? And they passed it. That was 1990. 1991, the U.S. went to war in Iraq. And so we proposed to the city council, and they passed it, that under the Human Rights Ordinance, we will only, in the city of Berkeley, we will only obey legal orders of the INS or the FBI. And we've used it hundreds of times since then. Now, it is actually the law of Berkeley and Sacramento, even if the city council doesn't pass it. But if you went to the city council of Sacramento and tried to get them to pass 55 and 56 of the UN Charter, they couldn't say you're crazy. It's right there. And it gives a new flavor. It brings it home. And I'm making this suggestion because I think it's the kind of thing we have to do. Yes?
Well, your story question, I don't know if you remember me. I'm Linda Robertson, the National Lawyers Guild Sacramento. Welcomes you here. In our city, we did get them to pass an ordinance for the living wage. We did get our city to pass an ordinance against the Patriot Act, with a lot of work. Back when Ann Rudin was our mayor, we got them to pass an ordinance creating that we were a sanctuary city and that we wouldn't turn refugees from the Central American to the INS.
Right.
We have done some good things.
Absolutely.
However, what my question is how do we use these things that you did of tonight to deal with our ordinance rule? And I don't know if you're familiar with what happened. It's when the agricultural ministerial happened in June of last year in preparation for the WTO conference, you know, which was a federal event being held in our city.
Right.
So they passed this outrageous parade ordinance and suddenly spent, what, how many millions of dollars on cops? $15 on cops. There was more cops than demonstrators. People were tortured. There's some people with permanent damage. People were arrested for no good reason. You know, there's films. It's one of the most shocking things you've ever seen. And very, very unfortunate is Miami then copied it for the FTAA. So how can we use the tools you've given us tonight to get our city to overturn that piece of crap?
Well, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you you've got to act and not react. So before anything else happens, you should walk in there. And if you want to, each of you could walk in on the next time there's a city council meeting, and one of you could propose that they pass the Convention on Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. That's the whole thing. They did that in San Francisco. One of you could propose that they pass in the city of Sacramento the Convention on Against Torture, which is part of what you're talking about, because what the police did with torture. And then somebody else could come in. I mean, and each one of you would say this is already part of the law, you see? And they would, we would on the offense, would be saying, we expect you to live up to the law as it exists. I think we've been much too slow in reacting. The Patriot Act was passed before we knew that it happened. They knew it was going to happen. And friends, you haven't even mentioned the Patriot Act is not the worst thing. They also have the Homeland Security Department, which forbids labor unions in certain facilities like airports. There are a whole series of them there in this book, in the new book we're doing. So it's much worse than it seems. It isn't just the Patriot Act. And I can't tell you what my suggestion is, that you quietly and talk to each of your city council members before the meeting. And if you've got some commission, like we have a commission on peace and justice, do you have anything like that here? Well then I should.
We do have a human rights commission.
All right. Well, if you have a human rights commission, I certainly would go to the Human Rights Commission and ask them to adopt Article. I would ask them to pass Article 55 and 56 for the city of Sacramento. I'd ask them to read this book. I'd ask them to have a learning session on what the existing law is in this moment. I mean, that's what I would do. I can't tell you exactly. I would convince them that they are not safe in their jobs if they violate these basic laws. And if any of them have any principle, you'd say democracy isn't safe. And that's the truth. It is not. I remember the Palmer Raids of 1920. I mean, they arrested a lot of people, 10,000 people. You know how many they deported? 256. But the terror was tremendous. The only answer is just to stand up, and you are convinced that it doesn't pay to go to the mall. You're not going to have the money to go to the mall anyway. With the jobs that are being shipped overseas, as you know, the telephone operators, not when you call about a telephone problem, they're talking to you from India. You all know that, right? They have an economic problem, and as Marxists, we know economics is pretty basic. This is being turned into a third world country, this country is. And I think as we talk to each other and people realize this, people are going to begin to moil up and think of things to do. Yes.
I have a very specific question. As you pointed out, the United States is not party to the International Criminal Court.
Right.
I understand there's a great deal of concern now in Britain because a number of Britons are very fearful that they will be, because they are a party to that court,
right,
and they will be prosecuted for American war crimes as aiders and abettors.
Right.
Do you know what's going on with that?
Yes. Actually, I have a couple of friends who are active in the Criminal Court Defense Group. There's a bar association built around the International Criminal Court. Some U.S. lawyers who wanted the U.S. to join are involved in that. It's very slow. That's the first thing to know. Nothing's going to happen quickly. The trials that are now going on in are the offenses in Yugoslavia many years ago.
So it's not a quick thing. That's one fact. The second fact is, I do believe that people like Kissinger are going to be cautious about traveling around the world because they might get arrested for crimes that they have committed somewhere.
He's pretty big.
Uh-huh. So I think that the interest that people have, I mean, if I could convince everybody in this room who spent time thinking about the International Criminal Court to think about the International Court of Justice, which you never heard of, would you know? I mean, almost never heard of. Do you know what I mean? If the U.S. way, you're never going to hear about the International Court any more than you hear about the International Court of Justice, which does not exist and has handed down these wonderful decisions that nuclear weapons are illegal. So the answer is it's going to be slow in the International Criminal Court, but it will move forward. It will. And I will bet you the United States will join. I'm not saying which minute. But I think that the fact that the U.S. cannot be king of the world, friends, is illegal, and it's going to be impossible. The world is not going to permit it. And the question is, what can we do to help bring about more quickly an end to the idea that the United States is king of the world? What we have to do is urge you to vote in November, and vote in a wise way to see that the United States leadership is not somebody that thinks they're king of the world. I can't tell you, you know, every single thing to do, but that's one thought, not original. Yes?
Hi, I'm a high school teacher, too. Do you have any suggestions and local connections to relate to the U.S. destruction of another country, for example, like Haiti? In other words, where it's in the process, the public doesn't exactly know what's going on. Haiti or Venezuela, but
right.
Any local type of...
All I know to do is have meetings like this, and in every single meeting, stand up and make a motion about Haiti. I kid you not. And that's something I was going to propose anyway. What I've been doing at all meetings, you ever show progressive movies in this town? Good movies? I'm proposing that at the end of the movie, you stand up and say, I make a motion that the people in this room pass a resolution to send the mayor of Sacramento on whatever the issue is. Or wherever you are, not in a church, or in a labor union, or in any meeting on any subject that has nothing to do with Haiti, you have a right. The First Amendment, and we now have a need to do new things. And I'm doing this now. It's amazing. It works. They can be angry, and you can stand to be defeated. But the fact is, you stand up and you say, I make a motion that this body go on record, and if you say Haiti, somebody's going to ask, what in the hell do you mean? And then you're going to have an opportunity. I think Aristide is a true hero. I think that we have a great debt to the people of Haiti, both for what they did in Saint Louverture and what they are doing today. I think we have a responsibility, and I would urge you to go to, you're in Sacramento, to go to the legislature tomorrow, walk into the office of your senator and in your assembly member. I urge you to put through a motion today condemning what the United States government did illegally in Haiti, or call for an investigation of the illegality of what the U.S. did in Haiti. I mean, friends, we have to come all the way from Berkeley to get to Sacramento. You're in Sacramento. I would go see Lockyer. I mean, he's a lawyer. Ask him to make a proposal that the state of California request that the United States government investigate violations of the law in terms of the treatment of Haiti. Or mention it in any public school. I don't think we can be, here's a meeting on this, here's a meeting on that. We're going to have to get quicker and do it more.
Also, speaking of doing new things, I mean, something any of us could do without going to any meeting, which is, you know, whatever your cause is, whatever you think, you know, that's not being brought up, or it is, but not enough, is, you know, like, either yourself or with a couple other people, it could just be one person on the corner with a sign.
Absolutely.
I mean, I saw this one guy yesterday with an impeachment. It's huge, you might have seen him. Impeachment, right? You know, I mean, it stirs up the spirit here.
Yes.
So thank you so much for coming.
If you've got an art class, you can make a banner. What we do in the Berkeley Fellowship of Unitarian Universalist people make huge banners, and some of the people who would never go to a meeting or make a speech love to walk on an overpass where there's a huge highway, and they love to hold the banner. Find out whatever anybody will do is what we need.
Okay.
Right. I was going to make a motion that this group go on record. What do you want to go on record doing? That's my idea, that each meeting should end with some action, even though this is an educational meeting. But that everybody here agrees that they will make one phone call. Why don't we? I make a motion that we have an agreement that we make an announcement to the press and to the state senator from the district and the state assembly, however many people, where I make a motion that we make that we say that we tell our state senator and state assembly member that 25 people gathered at the meeting on this night under these circumstances, that we should demand that you take action against the holding of the people on Guantanamo. That's a motion. Well, if there's a motion, it has to happen. Oh, you did say second. Well, then all right, that the secretary of this body, that you select somebody from this room to write that paper. Okay, so somebody will deliver it. Now we just need somebody to write it before we pass it. Who will write it? Long.
Seth.
Okay. Did somebody agree?
We'll wish Travis left.
You'll get that person to do it?
Travis will do it.
Okay, so the motion is that Travis write. The motion is that Travis or somebody will write it and that this person will take it.
I'll go with you, Lynette.
Okay. Is there any more discussion?
I'm going to supervise this.
Magnif. All right. So is there? All right. So is there any further discussion? Now you have to have a vote. All in favor? All opposed? All abstaining? Well, friends, that's my concept. If you did it to get in the habit of doing it,